Hello, dear listener. Welcome to season two, episode 10 of The Same Old Wobbles. Joining me today is the legend that is Adam Proctor, our tech wizard and guru, and Mon Frere Niall Cooper. Today we'll talk a little bit of politics, which is unusual. Unless you've listened before, in which case you'll know he always does. And I am your host, Matt Cooper. Today we're going to have a chat about the last couple of games, talk about penalties, which I think is an England obsession. So I'm really pleased that Wimbledon are joining in. And the just acknowledgement of the women's team, because that is just crazy. Niall's going to give us a bit of football politics, and we're just going to see how we're comparing to this time last year, if I can Google it in.
No one doubts the way you feel. No, your passion's very real. I must say we're all impressed the way the fans approach this test. The days have gone with football clubs who live and fly just on fans' love. Davis isn't just a game, and tough decisions must be made.
Okay, let's start. Adam, you were not on iPlayer last week. This is how we're reviewing away games. The Harrogate game. From what I understand, I mean, it seems like it was one of the more comfortable away wins. Is that how it felt to you?
I think so. I mean, the first half, definitely the second half slowed down a bit. And I might have fallen asleep during the last 10 minutes because I was just like game over. But, no, I think so. It seemed like, much better performance. The team seemed pretty galvanised. I enjoyed the game. I mean, I never like watching it on iFollow anyway, but and for those that travelled, I got back at like 3 a.m. the next day or something. Well done, what a fantastic travel, and so. And everyone was playing, and of course, I was screenshotting the league as we were playing. Oh, look, we're doing really well. So yeah, I mean, I it was a week ago almost, so my recollection of all the details of the game are obviously frosty. But I thought it was a good game. Second half was a little bit slow, but nothing that we couldn't deal with, which was great. So I'm pleased.
I thought that Niall, throughout the whole of the evening, Niall was sending us screenshots of us being in second place. Which I just think is asking for all sorts of trouble, to be honest with you.
I realise that, Matt, because I know the world of the football gods, and I know that I should never do that. But being that I never do that, where does superstition go? This is like your lucky pants. It's the kind of whole, am I supposed to not do it ever? But then we're in League Two. So maybe if I do it, then perhaps it'll be okay. I don't know, Matt. I don't know. But that's why I did it. I saw it. I thought about it. I thought I shouldn't do this. This is obviously anybody who has the lucky pants scenario in their head or the kind of football concept. You should never do that. I did it, and we ended the day second. So, and I had a very happy daughter who was going, "We're second." So I know. I don't know. I don't know. That's a great one for our listener to ask and come back to about whether. The lucky pants and the sending a screenshot like that, whether it is the right thing or wrong thing to do in terms of offending the football gods, and whatever our listener comes back and decides, I promise
I
to
think
do that for the next game.
I mean, it's exciting. It's exciting to be up there. And now then we move on to the Mansfield game, which I mean, all the indications were it was going to be a draw. We hadn't lost away, they hadn't lost at home. It just felt like it was going to be a draw. And I was very excited. And then me, Niall and I had gone for the week, gone on that Saturday. We weren't there watching. Usually I'm listening to the radio or whatever it is, but we were stuck in an escape room, and I'm quite surprised we got out, to be honest with you. That's how, it wasn't our choice, guys. We had, it was a planning thing. It'd been a while ago. So we come out of this escape room, and then the first thing we read is that we missed a penalty, and we might as well have gone back in. And it is that thing now that if we could score penalties, we would be top of the table. What has it been? How many points have we dropped? I can't remember if it's 6 points we've dropped from if we'd have scored penalties. I know that we missed against Grimsby in the first game of the season, and obviously we missed against Mansfield. But I think there was another one in there as well. It's
I'm going to go with your six. I don't know. Six sounds right.
It's a bit frustrating. But then I'm thinking, you know, there was a couple of games recently where we're playing against 10 men. And then I got to thinking, and I was just talking to Adam before the show started, I was just thinking, is the reason we're getting penalties and they're getting players sent off because we're now so quick? We're a good side that, in actual fact, it's difficult to stop us. So this is another piece of ammunition. And I just wondered what you thought about that, Adam. Do you think? I mean, is our new formation, is our pace getting us these opportunities?
I think you might be right to some degree. I mean, I'd have to go back and review all of them. But of course, the penalty on Saturday certainly looked that way. He was at one stride, one step ahead of the play, and so a slow, sluggish League Two defender is going to make those mistakes. In fact, you know, and so far referees have rewarded us with a penalty kick. In terms of conversion, I mean, you know, I mean, I couldn't score a penalty to save my life. But the hit in the crossbar and for it to bounce down, you know, literally, you know, obviously no goal line technology, thankfully. I don't want any extra technology in any of my games. But, yeah, it was a bit of frustration. And, of course, then it did sound that Tilly, after that, kept taking lots of extra shots because he really wanted to make up for that and was subbed because of that reason. So, yeah, I think we're a bit quicker than other teams because we're young, sprightly. So,
Nye, what do you think?
Just one very clear point. I think it's very important to say that I'm all in favour of goal line technology or those sorts of new VR examples or whatever, as long as they benefit AFC Wimbledon. At any point where they happen to show things that don't benefit us, I think they should be scrapped and kicked out. And that is the correct thought process of any decent football fan, and particularly any decent AFC Wimbledon fan. So, Adam, I just wanted to pick you up on that. As a proper AFC Wimbledon fan, you have to be in favour of all these technologies as long as it benefits us.
There is a thing.
That's how it works.
It was quite interesting. Then go back on social media, it's like people going, it's definitely crossed the line.
And oh, really? Sending, I didn't know that.
Screenshots, people going, it's crossed the line. And then other people, no, it hasn't crossed the line. It's like, it's crossed it. It was quite funny that started off that whole debate.
I had no idea that that was even a debate because it didn't look like it crossed the line to me. And I was just like, oh, it is what it is, you know. I think Ali ran up and he certainly looked a little bit like kind of quizzical. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not even going to say, am I? I shouldn't say. There's someone will recreate the whole stadium in some VR thing and we'll be able to, instead of escaping from a room, we'll be able to re-enjoy that moment.
Well, I feel that, let's say it's crossed the line. It's crossed the line. The goal wasn't given. Let's call Jurgen Klopp and demand a replay. I say we should have a replay for that. There should be a replay for many things. I think we need to look back on our past history and replay all those games that we lost. And what was it? Was it Peter? It was Peter Reid, wasn't it? Back in the 80s, who got one of our players sent off for simulating that he'd been headbutted. And I think he got Jones off or something. Yeah, it was.
It was Kevin Ratcliffe. Matt, it was Kevin Ratcliffe. I remember that really
Ratcliffe.
Vividly.
Of course it was Ratcliffe, because we all had the signs up the following season. The only thing you'll win Ratcliffe is an Oscar. Yes.
Kevin Ratcliffe. I do remember a Newcastle fan of mine saying that one of their chants was Peter Reid's got a massive head. So, but it was obviously a heed. So maybe that's why he gets so upset about that moment. But who knows?
Kevin Ratcliffe, he was the one who dived on the floor and got one of our players sent off. There was a lot of things that went against us. So I think we're going to have to people should send in on our very popular Twitter handle. We still call it Twitter because we're that old. That, you know, what games should be replayed? Should we have had replayed? Because I feel there was a few of them. Would we have still? Because if there, here's one, Niall, I think that we've talked about before. The Wimbledon versus Sunderland game, okay? And Ben Thatcher's elbow, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you see, if Thatcher had been sent off in that game, then he wouldn't have got injured subsequently. I think it was later on in that same game. Then he would have still been fit. Then we might have won, you know, one of those last few games, and we might have stayed in the Premier League. So
that is a brilliant one, Matt, because to pick up on that, that was, I think that game was in like December. It was a really cold December. We won the game. No,
was it? Or was it? I thought it was later than that.
No, it was quite, middle of the season. There was still like 15, 16 games. Because the two people that got injured that season that basically destroyed us were Ben Thatcher and Robbie Earl, who got injured. And I actually really firmly believe, had Ben Thatcher got sent off in that game and not got injured, then that would have made enough of a difference for us to have stayed in the Premier League.
So in terms of that, right, while Matt checks the exact details of when that game was played, in terms of that, are we worried about injuries this season? Because obviously Art Bugle went down and in one of the matches, I can't remember what it was, Saturday or whenever it was, maybe it was Tuesday. And again, I was a bit worried. I was like, things are starting to come together, but like, do we...
Well, I think it's all that, Adam. I mean, like, you know, it arguably, if Reeves and Little hadn't have been injured at that time, then we might not have thrown away those two goal leads. So we might have had, and you know, like I'm giving us another 10 points, 6 points through penalties, and another four points through.
We'd be smashing the league if that was the case.
We'd be smashing the league, yeah. And obviously we'd have beaten Chelsea, so we'd been in the next round of the Carabao Cup.
Making a few quid.
And before you, I see Niles Dowdy's looking, you can't see this, but Niles looking through his books to find out when that Thatcher thing was. It was January 2000, Niles, so you can stop looking. Adam, it's an interesting, nice picture. It's an interesting, thing about the injuries because, you know, I think all squads are going to suffer because, you know, we're not playing at this level. We are reliant on some good players. I mean, arguably, if something happens to Al Hamadi, then that causes us a huge amount of problem. And the same goes for Reeves. The same goes for Josh at the back because I think our centre backs are really good. So it is, you know, those things are worrying. If we can keep our players fit, then we'll be fine. But my concern is less injury. More January.
I mean, so in terms of like Saturday's game, we know there's some international call-ups. So Al Hamadi's not going to be available Saturday. That's right, isn't it? Is Zanif, is he New Zealand then as well? So we wouldn't have him on the bench. So who do we have on the bench? Who's our third goalie now?
What an excellent question.
I used to play goal, but I'm probably a bit old now. Might not be that good. You know, I take it. I don't mind. I take the hit. I mean, I probably prefer sitting more on the seat rather than on the bench, to be honest. But you know,
I wonder who we should know this. Later.
Yeah, I'm looking it up now because we should. Okay, well, I've just looked at the website and I've gone to team, and there's only two goalies listed. unless our third goalie hasn't had a picture taken. Then I guess the under-18s, can we draft one of those people in?
Well, this is a very interesting point. So who would be our third? Who's our third keeper? Because obviously Broom's gone over the summer. So
okay, we've got two choices from what I can tell in the academy. We've got a guy called Luca Ziga, favourite AFC Wimbledon moment, winning Gallini Youth Cup and winning Goalkeeper of the Tournament Award. Sounds useful. And Harry Griffiths, whose favourite AFC Wimbledon moment was being 15 playing against the franchise. Obviously, that's not what it says on the website. In the Cup under-18s, winning the game and keeping a clean sheet. Also sounds like good reasons to be a goalie. So maybe we'll get one of those guys. Griffiths has got curly hair. They've both got curly hair. They both look quite aggressive. Excellent. So we'll get one of those, I'm assuming.
Yes, I assume so. We just need someone who can tell us you know what? Because I think we're doing. I couldn't even tell you how well we're doing in the development things. But historically, we've been really good. And I think that, talking of really good, we are making huge strides, aren't we? In our progress, comparing ourselves to last season. I think after last season, we about this time last year, we'd won three games, and we were kind of like 14th mid table. So we are totally moving in the right direction. And it is now JJ's squad. So we've got, we have got a good solid squad, and we're pushing on. Like we say, I guess the issues are going to be injuries and January. Those are always the two big concerns for a team like
that. We've still got some players to come back from injury, haven't we? We've got Bill Eyre is still on training, and a couple of other people. So hopefully they'll be, if anything does happen, they'll be fully back.
I think Bill is an interesting one, because he would normally be on the right-hand side, so he'd be taking Og's position. And I think he's done so well now. I think that's a great problem to have. And PK's not been seen around our side recently. So, but if you can get PK as a cover, as a centre back, and Hudson Biller as a right back, I think that would be a brilliant thing. But talking of doing well, obviously our men's team is doing exceptionally well, but our women's team over the last couple of weeks have been smashing goals in for fun. So it's they've beaten both the Cambridge sides, scoring eight goals in each one. It's just been absolutely incredible. And again, I think creeping up the table.
There must be a song there somewhere for Philo to drag out for eight is the lucky number. Because when we used to win games massive in the CCL, it's one of those things I actually quite like thinking what next song number he's going to come out with. They're always themed. So maybe there must be something there. So Philo, if we want to know what songs we should play for eight. Otherwise, we'll have to just put that in, Adam, at the end as our song of the week.
Yeah.
And I think because I don't know when our next game is at Plough Lane. As you can tell, listeners, we are so prepared for this. We don't know this. We don't know that. So we've been playing these games at Colchester. And I'm looking forward to the next game back at Plough Lane, because I'd like to get we need to get more people down there. The team are doing so well, and we could be really on the cusp of going up. I think if we win our games in hand, we'd be up at the top of the table. It feels a little bit closer for the women's team than it did last season.
It looks like it's the 29th of October. Is our next game at Plough Lane, which is against London Seaward at 2 o'clock on the 29th of October. Although the page is now no longer loading for whatever reason. So yeah, that and then the rest are away for ages. So yeah, if you want to see the, if you want to watch the women's game, the 29th of October, 2 o'clock at Plough Lane. So that's cool.
Yeah, get down. I mean, it feels like the last couple of weeks they have just completely taken off. They had a bit of a difficult start, and then it's just they've been, obviously the last couple of games they've been pounding sides. Maybe it's the thing about Cambridge. I don't know what it is, but that's it. And they've certainly been teaching Cambridge a lesson, and it's fantastic. So get down there on the 29th. You're saying, Adam. 29th of October. That sounds brilliant. Yeah, and because it's things have been going well for us. I can't go beyond that, because I'll get like now I get slightly nervous that if you say these things, all of a sudden.
I know you guys get worried about that, but I'm not. Like I predicted we'd be in the playoffs at the end of the season. We are currently at the top of the playoffs, and if we'd won on Saturday, we'd have been like, not, we'd have been first or something ridiculous.
I don't even know how I feel about the playoffs. They just make me, they make me horrendously nervous. I'd rather go, if we can we just go straight up, please? Can we miss the playoffs and go straight up?
But I would go for straight up, but I'm not being even that positive at the moment.
But it has been fantastic. And but football itself has been, it's just so weird. I'm listening to Radio 5 Live, you know, 6:06 when it's on, and all these people, all the conversation is about VAR. It's always about VAR, and people going, "Oh man, you know, football's ruined." And I was going, "Not the football I'm watching, mate. You know, the football I'm watching from EFL football is not, it's not like that." And I just think there's something beautiful about scoring a goal and going completely crazy and just losing your chip basically for that time. It's fantastic, you know. But now it's all like all so stuttered, and everything is just like, it's not just watching the linesman to see if the linesman's got a flag up. It's the linesman might have a flag up, and then you've got to watch VAR, and then it's however many seconds or whatever it is, and it just feels like a different, it is a different kind of game. And I get it to a degree because there's a lot of money involved with it, but it needs to be, it now, it feels like, to be honest with you, at the moment, it's still being tested because it's not working. It's still being tested. And yet there was different technology at the World Cup than there is in the Premier League, because they have a chip in the ball. I think it's almost instantaneous in terms of telling offsides and such like. But and no one wants to take responsibility for it, because now everyone can defer responsibility somewhere else. So it's just, it is a different game. And I guess the thing is, like, Maradona's handball, let's take a real example. Maradona's handball could have been ruled out, and rightly so, but that is going to be something of football mythology. That's legend that just goes on for forever. All the and Frank Lampard's goal against Germany, you know, which crossed the line by a mile. You know, these are things that become football folklore, and maybe I'm not saying they're necessarily right, because those are two instances where England were on the wrong side of it. But there is something about that which is quite interesting. But I think a lot of it is, I mean, you know, football is so money. And I don't know if there's anything to change then. No, obviously you're with your fair game hat on. You've been down to the, I'm assuming you went to the Lib Dem conference. Did someone go to the Tory conference as well? Is someone at the Labour conference? You know, the whole situation with our national game is interesting.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was at Lib Dem conference, and it was really useful. I mean, I think probably just to frame where it is for AFC Wimbledon fans, and I'll try and do this as quickly as I possibly can. There's a new deal being put on the table by the between the Premier League and the EFL, and it will mean a slightly more cash in the EFL to be distributed down the pyramid. The issue is that the ratio of how that money is split doesn't look like it's going to change any particular way. And that ratio at the moment gives 80% to Championship clubs, 12% to League One clubs, 8% to League Two clubs, and absolutely nothing to the National League. So obviously that does not reflect average divisional attendances, which is more like 50%, 25%, 13%, and then 6% for the National League and 3% for the National League North and South. So it's very far off a fair deal. But the pressure is on to accept a deal because, you know, the EFL, their voting structure also massively skews towards the Championship. So the voting structure within the EFL, the surprise is actually that any money at all goes to League One and League Two, because it doesn't have to. The Championship has the voting power to basically take all the money and run. The only way this is going to be fixed is if an independent regulator comes into play and looks at trying to address that cash in a more equitable way. So that's the key. So from a fair game perspective, you know, we've made an awful lot of progress in getting a regulator into place, and we've done an awful lot of work there, and I'm really proud of the team. You know, from across the country, all sorts of people from representing so many different clubs. You know, I'm not the one who's done all the kind of calculations or the research. Far from me. There's lots of other people who've done the clever stuff. But the finances of it is something that AFC Wimbledon and other clubs really need to wake up to, because there's basically what I call a bribe on the table from the Premier League to accept this deal. And it'd be a 6-year deal, which would entrench the problems, the financial difference between the Championship and League One and League Two, and actually still maintain parachute payments. So actually it would still maintain the idea of the Championship being a basket case, and it doesn't have strong enough rules about stopping equity investment into clubs. And that's where an owner comes in and throws loads of extra cash and ruins the whole kind of way it works, which is what's being quite opposed by a number of clubs I'm aware of in League One. So there's a whole issue about the whole thing needs to change. What we need to do as a club is really campaign very hard to change 80-20, and we need to look at trying to restrict equity investment, because those are the things that make football sustainable and a much more level playing field, because it isn't at the moment. And a club like ours struggles because of it. And any club that tries to run financially sustainable struggles unless that's addressed. Because you to compete in the level above, you need to spend massively to kind of get there. By doing that, you put the risk of your entire club on the line. And it's just not the way forward. And we're seeing lots of political support, and the Lib Dems basically came out completely in favour of fair game at their conference, which was absolutely brilliant. They've got campaign leaflets. They've instructed their councillors to campaign on this issue. The Labour Party are very interested and talking about us about divisional average attendances. There's a lot of political will. The problem is that at the moment, it still lies with the football authorities. So we need clubs, if they're going to do a deal, to make sure it's a very short-term deal that looks and saying, well, the next people who can make this decision are the independent regulator who will have that remit set by those politicians. There's a lot that needs to change, and a lot of work that still needs to be done. The system isn't fair. It doesn't benefit AFC Wimbledon. There is light there, but we need to kind of buck our game up as a club and really get roll our sleeves up, fans and the executive, to really make sure that we get a deal that's actually beneficial for not just AFC Wimbledon, but the whole football system. And there's a lot of support out there from some clubs, but, you know, we can't be just sitting on the sidelines doing nothing.
No, is great. This is great. I've got one question. Is voting rights. So, you know, you're saying that, you know, that there's this deal on the table, which could be taken, which, you know, basically it just move the chairs about on the Titanic, so to speak. But who votes for it? I mean, isn't there more votes with the Championship clubs than there are with League One and League Two? So already, you know, it is a challenge to change the system at the moment.
Yeah, totally. So the overall deal, any kind of changes in the EFL, any kind of stuff has to be approved by the EFL clubs, right? But the weighting of the clubs is 50% of the votes lie with the Championship, 33% with League One, and 16% with League Two. So it means that if the Championship clubs were to vote on as a block, it doesn't matter what anyone, League One and League Two, thinks. So the 24 clubs in the Championship have control over the EFL. And that's been the case for years. And that's fundamentally the problem with the EFL. So you should get over the idea of thinking the EFL represents all the clubs in the EFL. EFL effectively represents the Championship and maybe one or two ambitious clubs in League One. That's it. So it does not represent the 72 clubs. Definitely does not. So that's one thing you really need to grasp. The bit that's a bit interesting about this deal is they're trying to break it down in divisional differences. So there's the difference in what's on the table for League One clubs, what's on the table for League Two clubs, and what's on the table for the Championship clubs. There's a slight difference. And what the EFL have currently proposed is that for the deal, for each division needs to vote in favour of the deal. Now, That all sounds fine, except there's no counter deal. So it's either you take it or you don't have anything. So, which means who's going to vote for, I will have cash or I will not have cash. So you can see how that works. So it's very different. So I'm aware of clubs in League One and League Two who are beginning to have this conversation about thinking, well, what can we put forward as a counter proposal to change this deal? That's the hope. So you can see this whole thing's completely, you know, it's rigged. It's not.
When does the independent regulator come in? I mean, when would that come
that,
in?
That obviously doesn't exist at the moment. There's a bill we're hoping it will come through in November in the King's Speech. And once that goes through, then it will be in the King's Speech. Then there'll be a bill we're expecting in January, February time. If that goes through, passes through, which will probably be March, then we will have a regulator on the books. It won't actually probably come into operation. The DCMS still optimistically talk about it being in place for September next season. I think that's very optimistic. But that's when you could start be looking at all these sort of things, having holistic oversight. And that's when we could start seeing some significant changes. But the key to that is that regulator must have, in its remit, control over the financial flow in football, which the Tories are not particularly in favour of. So that's the bit we need to do a bit of lobbying. So anybody who lives in a Conservative constituency should be saying, like Wimbledon, for example, should be saying, right, this is the one thing you need to vote for. You need to vote to make sure that that regulator has financial flow as part of the agreement.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for clearing that all up. And all I can say is, hurrah, you know, great that the Lib Dems have put it on their thing, because, you know, they're Lib Dems. So anyhow, thank you so much.
Say that, the Lib Dems, obviously, you have to remember it's the May council elections. So the Lib Dems are in powerful in seats where there are National League North and South clubs, National League clubs in League Two. That's where the Lib Dems want to be making a breakthrough. So politically, it's actually really important. So again, if you're
a Lib Dem,
you know, there's a party that probably is the most pro what AFC England want. And that's, at the moment, it's the party in yellow.
Orange,
whatever.
I mean, it is orange. I'm not going down that route. I mean, they're all
that,
orange. It's great. I mean,
and it's bad enough that we sit next to two people who are avid Liberal Democrat supporters, and I have to say that. So
no, I love them, and I I've got a lot of time for their leader. Anyhow, so we're Clegg, isn't it? Whatever. So it's great. I think we need to do what we can to get this. Financing football is a sham. The technology is just a bit. It's just messing with our national game as well. There's a whole load of things, and hopefully, if we can get this regulated, then we can start moving in a more positive direction for our national game, the game that we care so much about. And you know, it is a passion, and I think at this moment I want to pass on, you know, our condolences to Alice Dunnett, who's lost Sid Dunnett, died last week. He was the grandfather of the former AFC Wimbledon manager Keith Hoster. So, and he's been a supporter. He's like basically royalty, as far as I understand. I didn't know Sid particularly, but I remember seeing him around, and I know there's just like nothing but lovely comments coming for him on socials. So, just really sad for, you know, people like that. And I hope that hopefully he's going to get a really good mention on the in the program and on the game on Bradford this Saturday. But there, you know. Just some amazing, just some wonderful people that support our club, and I've been supporting them for years and years and years. They are the same old Wombles. Anyhow, just so then, to sort of like...
Very quick thing about Sid. You know, that he was part of a brilliant series of pictures, which we've all seen around the ground. And it's just, I think for me, that's something that really touched a nerve for me, because it was a nice thing. When you see all those pictures of all the different kind of type of fans that we've got, because it was all the old fans, the young fans, the mothers, people with disabilities, you know, all those sort of stuff, different ethnic minorities. It was great to see them as part of that series. And it was, I think those series of photographs, which were actually taken by a really renowned photographer, by the way, whose name I completely forget. But, you know, that for me was absolutely iconic. And it really, that's a really great series. And I hope that, you know, Sid's memory lives on in those photographs and those pictures, those brilliant images that it still left around the ground. So I think, you know, there is a legacy that lives on, you know, and by all accounts, a great man.
Yep. Yeah, I know, it's great stuff. Just wonderful people who support our wonderful club. Okay, so coming towards the end, I think that a little bit of notice, the Don's Trust elections are coming up. And I think there's been something put out on the Don's Trust board. So we're about to start that fun and games again, which will be interesting. I'm assuming, Adam, you're going to go for it, yeah? There's usually one of us who goes for it. He's shaking his head. Niall's done it. I've heard enough from people. And obviously, our previous host, Mark, you know, he's on the Don's Trust board, and now because of that, he can't do this. So it just feels like you're a bit tied. And I know there's a lot of people who I think would be wonderful candidates on the Don's Trust board, but would just wouldn't go for it. Sometimes they could be more influential outside of it. Sometimes, and I think people have seen the amount of abuse that you get as a DTB member. And the sort of like politics that goes with it, it just feels difficult. So I really hope we get some good strong candidates who go for it. That's my thing, but I know that people are gonna be worried because of the pressure you've been put under. Obviously, Niall, you left it, and Adam, you wouldn't go for it.
No, it's a tricky... No, I wouldn't go for it. But that's mainly because I don't think I can offer at this point anything additional outside of what I've already tried to offer. And I tried a couple of times and didn't really get anywhere. So I think I would rather sort of step back. And I think what I'd like to see is, you know, two things. I think it's got to be someone local, you know, who can easily get to these things and be present and all that kind of stuff to continue to build the local community. And I'm not easily local. And as we discussed at the end, at various points in the last round of elections, that we really need to see a diverse group of those nominated. We need to see that those who identify as female represented in the nomination, those who identify as under 25 represented. So I don't know how you reach out to those people. And although there was a lot of conversation and discussion had with people who actually got onto the board about ensuring that, and I know there's been a lot of work done in equality, diversity and inclusion, I'm hoping that work also reaches out to encourage those to step forward. So, yeah, I don't know. Our demographic...
There's like a young people's board. I understand there's young people under 25's board. So hopefully some of them will be encouraged to stand. But people need to be protected as well. Also, I feel we'll probably get onto this more closer to the time. But I think it's kind of tricky to stand on a manifesto, because you can say, if I get elected, I will. Blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, you can't, because you work. It's a democracy. So you work within a group of people, and you might believe this, but the truth is, the majority of the people on the board might believe something completely different. So it's I think it's very difficult to promise things in a manifesto. To say that, you know, you would do this, that and the other, which might sound quite radical, because the truth is you wouldn't be able to, because you're going to be surrounded by other people who are going to have different opinions. Also, there's a whole club structure that goes with it as well that you've got to respond to. So it's difficult. No, you can give us some insight there.
Yeah, totally. I think the one thing I'd say about it's really difficult, isn't it? Being a Donors Trust poor person. I mean, I think one bit of advice would be ignore social media, because it's not pleasant for that, because you can't do anything right on that score. But what you can do is you can see the progress and the success you make by watching how things change internally. So there is avenues. Your eyes will get opened on a whole range of different things. I think there are certain positions within the club as a honor manifesto that I think are important for people to spell out. Obviously I'm talking about fan ownership as one of those. But there are other things that you can do. You can look at, where does your skill set add in? What can you look, having a proper look at where the club is succeeding or not succeeding, and thinking about what kind of thing could you add to the board that actually would help set the right strategic direction and gather fans in. I'm a very firm believer that one thing that we need to do far more of is look at our fan base as a load of skill sets and actually bring them on board. So somebody who's able to create that route effectively would be really good. And we tried it with, and this is the problem with the turnover of the board, because when board changes, you lose that kind of impetus. So, I mean, when I was on the board, we tried to do quite a lot about trying to get volunteers more properly involved and ingrained in the club, and actually using those skill sets to really push the club on. But you need to have those kind of set projects that you want people to deliver. So, that process, that structure is one thing I think somebody could come in on the board with, that kind of commitment. Whether they need to live locally, I've got a real issue about. Really issue about whether
Going with skills, saying you can offer these particular skills rather than making pledges that you can change these things.
Yeah, I think, and saying this is what I want, I've got this skill set, and this is what I will want to use my skills to deliver this particular thing. So, like, I am, I don't know, a fundraiser. I will actively go and look at how we can get extra revenue out of Wimbledon's USP. Right, and I will want to work with that. I want to help work with the club. Or I am somebody who is really keen on fan engagement, and I want to look at how we can do all this sort of stuff. Or I, a whole range of that stuff. I want to look at how we can embed ourselves in these things. Those sort of skills are sort of things I think we could be looking at.
Listen, guys, we're going to have more of a conversation about this as we go on. So nominations open, as far as I can see on the DT board. They open on the 7th. So, gosh, they've opened then. So nominations have opened opened on the 7th. They close on the 28th. Manifestos are sent out on the 1st. Ballots sent out on the 11th of November. And the deadline for ballots is the 2nd of December. So it's a process. It's a couple of months process. I don't want to put people off standing. And I hope we get really, really good people in there with, brilliant skills, but my worry is just knowing people who've been on the board there, some of their experiences.
I mean, I think I was going to say the last thing I say on this, and I know we will come back to it, is I think I agree with what you guys are saying generally anyway, is that in terms of, like, if you're nominating yourself or you want to be nominated, I think the key thing is to look at what the Don's Trust board has been doing that you think is exciting, interesting, make a reference to that, show how you can take that forward because of your skill set, the kind of things that you bring. And if you are going to go anywhere near the manifesto type thing, just make it clear on particular obvious things where you stand. And like Noel says, the fan ownership stuff. But I think if you can talk to current board members on the Saturday games or on the Don's Trust board to find out the kind of direction of travel and align your manifesto with the things you think are really good to show how you're going to take the club forward, followed by, key positions where you stand, rather than, I think the last few have been a bit too manifesto-y and like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Whereas actually what we need, as we've seen in a few other areas, stability, continuity, and to take forward things where we think we can really help. And I'm sure there are fans out there that have the skill sets that can do this, who are able to, provide those. And just, I think it's, if you can see that, then I think avoiding the social media, all that kind of stuff, and all that other jazz, hopefully will chill out anyway, and we won't see any of that nonsense, and people will start to just say the board is refreshing to move things forward rather than being changing.
Well, all I can hope for is that we keep doing well, because if we keep finding that the noise on social media dampens somewhat, if we keep doing well, if we can keep doing well, and we cannot and employ the right staff, and people aren't going to say silly things, then we're going to be. It's not too much to ask, is it? Surely. Right, chaps. Listen, we've gone slightly over. I'll have to leave my my Isthmian squad for another time, which is a shame because I had them all in front of me here. But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that another time.
Hang on. So the one thing we were prepared for, you've now ditched.
I know the one thing I actually prepared. We're not going to do. Yeah. So there you are, listener. Another pod of vagaries. Slightly made up information from some old wombles who really should know a lot better. I hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week when we might have more things put in the pipeline. Thank you very much, Adam. Thank you very much, Montfrere, Niall, and we'll catch you next week on the same old wombles.